big news today. I was not expecting to see this one out there. Shams Charania had the Shams bomb on it. Cavs president Kobe Altman, the architect. I'm starting to read an agent tweet here. Cavs president of basketball operations, Kobe Altman. He signed a contract extension through 2029-30.
How did he describe it? The architect of what?
Of the burgeoning title contender.
All right, do you buy the descriptor?
No, that's why I stopped halfway through and like, all right, that's polish.
See, I wasn't sure if he was going to do any like, because he actually got the job in what, 2017, 2018? And so yeah. I didn't know if he was going to get credit for the finals trip, the last finals trip that LeBron went on, and then kind of ease into the current record and everything else.
I would have given him more credit for that than burgeoning title contender after getting bounced out in the second round of the playoffs. But Mike Gansey and Brandon Weems, amongst others in the Cavs front office, also receiving extensions. And I think this is the right move. This is a good move.
Well, so I'm going to read way too into this, okay? And you tell me if you think that I'm right or if I'm off base here. But if I was trying to make a big-time splash or a big-time move, wouldn't I want the security of my job? Like, you know me, when I think about this stuff, I always look at, are they safe with their job? Or are they not safe with their job? Mm-hmm. And it feels like every time an executive, and whether that's a president of basketball operations or a GM, somebody in the NBA makes a decision, it's based off of, can I keep my job after I do this? And so if you wanted to make a big time splash, wouldn't you want this security attached to it? Like, I almost see a scenario where Dan Gilbert was giving him this extension and playing with the idea that if you're going to make a big move, understand you can go for it by getting a LeBron or something else, and your job is still safe. You still have your job, and if not the job, you at least have the money attached to it. You can fail. You can take risks within the security.
So let me ask you, do you think he did this because there actually is a big move that they're going to take a swing on, or it's the hypothetical, hey, I want you to know you have security in case that opportunity comes up?
I think it's the hypothetical, but I do think it's interesting that the Cavs have been linked to LeBron over the weekend. You obviously were linked up with the Kevin Durant trade rumors. You're linked up with a couple different scenarios, and I don't know, maybe what was standing in their way of pulling the trigger in any of those other instances is Kobe saying, well, what happens if it doesn't work out and then I'm out on my ass and I don't have a job anymore? Whereas this is Gilbert saying, you got the flexibility to be able to do this.
In lieu of something very specific, I'll probably err on the side of, I think this was just, hey, look at where you've taken the franchise. Even though we haven't gotten where we wanted to, let's solidify you and the other principal pieces in place, because regardless of the changing pieces around, I think Dan is very comfortable working with Kobe. And I think that's a good sign, by the way, because I think that means Kobe has proven that if Dan does the, I'm going to be a hover parent and then I'm going to kind of disappear for a minute, that Kobe can work within that.
Well, it's a good time for Kobe in general, because Dan's now got his hand in the cookie jar in other aspects as well.
Yep.
He's bringing the WNBA team here. He's got the Cosm Sports coming. He's got all the new developments happening around the Cavs. Like, he's got, once again, he's got a lot of reasons to not just be solely focused on the basketball team 24/7.
I just kind of think it's fascinating that I think this is the first GM to get a contract extension, if I'm correct here, since, is it Wayne Embry? I mean, I'm trying to think.
Well, this is his third extension.
That's what I meant. Was like, you didn't just get the first extension. You got another extension here. And I think that's, I just think that's cool. Like, to me, that means Dan likes and trusts Kobe. And I still don't know. Like, listen, we're so, I don't want to say so early into it, because the guy's had a job for 8 years. But there's still so much about Kobe's legacy that is to be written over the next couple years that I still don't know entirely, is he a good GM or is he a great GM? I like the chance that I like the fact that even though I don't agree with everything Kobe does, I like the fact that there's an acknowledgement here of these guys have led us where we are, and we're gonna reward that, and we're gonna let them see this out, because I think that's the only way you could really screw this up is if we went from, all right, well, JB was on the hot seat, he didn't get it done, now we got a new coach, now it's the GM's turn. No. You've got some consistency here. You've got some, you know, we're a little solid here. Let's see where that continuity can go in terms of growing this team.
I mean, I can't overstate enough how impressed I am with the ability of Kobe Altman to take this from what's supposed to be a basketball wasteland after LeBron James and have this team to not only a one seed last year, but in the driver's seat to be a contender. Like, that's a really hard thing to accomplish. You lose LeBron James, you're supposed to just suck for a long time. This is supposed to be a really bad stretch of basketball, but he drafted Darius. He was able to draft Evan Mobley. He made the big trade for Donovan. He got Jared Allen at the right time. Like, he's done a lot of wizardry when it comes to piecing this thing back together.
And he hasn't been perfect. Obviously, the neglect of the wings. And okay, we need to go back and look at that Isaac Okoro draft. It was, you weren't drafting Tyrese Halliburton. That was not a great draft. Maybe a Devin Vassell would have been a game changer for you, even though he's still mostly been on bad teams. But I think the good outweighs the bad. And you look at it, all four of your best players, all four of your all-stars have been acquired by Kobe. And by the way, Jared Allen was acquired with an asset that you got in the ashes of LeBron leaving. Donovan was acquired with one of the assets, Colin Sexton, that you got for Kyrie. So that deal lives on. Evan, obviously, you got, there's a little bit of luck there because it was either going to be Evan or Jalen Green, depending on where Houston went. But you drafted the right guy. You didn't get cute with it. Even Darius. Like, I remember the first four, that Darius draft, the first four guys off the board were pretty set in stone. Mm-hmm. And the last one being DeAndre Hunter went fourth.
We were having knock-em-out, drag-em-out fights on this station the day of. People were debating who to take.
Even though some of the concern with Darius, undersized point guard, injury risk, even though that's borne fruit into the NBA, yeah, he took him, and Darius has developed into just a hell of a basketball player.
Well, I heard an NBA pod the other day debating whether or not Darius is the best player out of that draft. That was the Zion and Ja draft.
And so I look at this, and I look at what, and it really is, like, it's so funny because we're so, especially with the news of the Quinshon stuff, or the news of any of the stuff we've gotten, it's very easy to get very cynical. When I saw this news, I just said, listen, I don't agree with the direction that Kobe's taken. I think he's being safe and a little too precious here. But I'm willing to be wrong about that, as I was last year when I was like, hey, if you can get value for Darius, trade him. He couldn't get value for Darius. They brought him back and they won 64 games and, you know, were the one seed until they got knocked off. Like, you can't ignore the body of work, even if there are things you can look at and go, well, I don't like that and I don't like that.
Yeah, and what's interesting now is I'm thinking about the people in town, not to take us too far away from this for a second, but like, you have Antonetti and Chernoff that have been in their roles for 20 years, and then you have Andrew Berry, who's been on 6 years, and now, I mean, with this, with Kobe, that's 8 years running, and throughout the contract duration would be 13 years. I got a lot of people that have been in place for a long time, but there's a lot of trust right now in Kobe Altman, and I think that's what Dan is trying to tell you.
I think that's what's... Okay, so like the Browns are in a really, really, really rough spot here. I'm just talking about, like, you're coming off 3-14. The Deshaun thing has been decided as the worst trade in NFL history. There's a lot of ambiguity in what this season's going to be. But if you look at the 5 seasons that these guys have been here, they haven't had enough success, but they have had more than, you know, what other people have said. I know we're in the midst of bother about Antonetti and Chernoff and the status of this offense. You look at what these guys have accomplished. It's a very nice era of Guardians baseball. And same thing with Kobe. From his linkage to the second LeBron years and being the GM for the last year of that to rebuilding. Like, this is why when there are moments to completely melt down, I tend not to, because I'm like, a baseball team I can trust every other year to be good. Kobe's got this on lock, and Dan seems to have simmered down as an owner. And all right, you're not as in dire of a situation with the Browns as you were when these guys took over.
No, it's interesting just to think about. And maybe this changes with Andrew Berry down the line, but like, at least from the basketball and baseball perspective, like, the two of them seem pretty solidified. But this is a good thing for Kobe Altman. I think it's a good thing for Cavs fans to just look and see that not only can he rebuild it from nothing if you end up in that spot 2 years from now where you have all sorts of contract problems, and because especially the way the NBA is now where they're constantly telling you to take it down to the studs and build it back up. But he can do it. He can pull it off.
Well, I think what's interesting is if tomorrow the Guardians announced Chernetti were getting contract extensions, there would be people who are really frustrated because of the status of where the Guardians are.
Yeah.
If Andrew Barrett got a contract extension tomorrow,
a lot of frustration there, too.
I think that might be putting it mildly.
Yeah.
Because people want this to be...
Well, we'd be confused.
Wait,
where did this come from?
But this is where you got to give Kobe credit. Because the Cavs are in a spot where even though I don't think anyone should be content with the playoffs, and I don't know anyone has to be content with not changing anything and the margin stuff, the reality is Cavs basketball, this is the most stable stretch of Cavs basketball without LeBron James since Mike Fratello was fired. And that includes since LeBron left the first time. That includes where he had three head coaches in 3 years, right? That includes, you know, kind of the pre-LeBron years where we're taking Senegalese centers who have never played, and it's a huge risk there with the seventh pick. Like, this is, I have qualms with him, but there's a part of me that's like, you've stabilized this thing in a way that a lot of other people tried to outside of LeBron and haven't been able to. That is a very good step for the Cleveland Cavaliers.
And maybe this is what ultimately Haslam's looking at when he thinks about Andrew Berry. Because think about it. There's been multiple times within Kobe Altman having this job where people have called for his head. And like very aggressively so. I remember thinking 3 years in, it was right around the John Beilein disaster. I remember thinking there's no way he escapes out of this.
Yeah.
Like there was this very little chance that he could not only escape it, but then also be able to turn it around. And then and at that point, we had so many different people writing about him being fired and potentially being gone. And for him to just bounce back the way that he has, like it's really been impressive. And now obviously he gets the extension today and he's going nowhere, but he turned that thing around. It was an absolute zero for a stretch there with Kobe Altman, and everything was a battle. It didn't seem like he knew what he was doing. So now it seems like he for sure knows what he's doing, and he fixed it right.
In the NFL, we very rarely have this narrative. In Major League Baseball, we very rarely have this narrative. In the NBA, all the time there are guys fired that it just doesn't make sense. It was an impetuous owner. It was a guy set up to fail. Of course he failed.
All to get Joe Dumars in place.
No, exactly. Where what I think is great about this is I don't know if Kobe's going to stick the landing with his team. I don't know if we're going to win a championship in the next 2 to 3 years. It feels farther away from that after the Pacers series this year than it did maybe a year before when he got bounced out by Boston. So there is a big I don't know. It's still tough to see the forest from the trees. What I do know is that Kobe and his, I almost called him acolytes, his lieutenants deserve the opportunity to see this through. And so what I really hope this means is in a year's time, if we're sitting on the precipice of another disappointing playoff exit, then we're not just paying Kobe Altman 4 years to just chill at home and just be like a house dad. Like I hope this really is what it looks like, which is Dan Gilbert saying, all right, you've gotten us here. I'm going to give you a long time to figure this out. Because even if 3 years go by and you've topped out in the conference finals, it'll still be the most consequential LeBron non-LeBron run in Cavs history. When you stack them back to back, it will have surpassed the Lenny Wilkins, Wayne Embry Cavs.
When you talk about the time, though, with extension, that's the important part here, because he can take a big time swing if he wants now and live through the repercussions of it, or he can just say, "I'm right about this setup. You guys think it's a puzzle piece that doesn't fit all together, right? But I'm right about this, and I want to see this thing through." It just gives him a lot of flexibility. Now, are you reading anything into the Brandon Weems side of this at all?
Because of the LeBron stuff?
Yeah.
No. If he
people
was the
want to.
If he, well,
people
of course,
want to.
Of course, we want LeBron back, and we want him to take a
buyout. LeBron's already tweeted out about it. LeBron's excited.
Yeah, people are saying that as shade at Kobe, and it's like, no, Brandon's this guy. Like, what are we doing here? He's not trying to get Brandon as the GM. Kobe just got an extension. Everybody got an extension. It's a good thing.
Did we not see the tweet? He got the extension. he got his job secure. It's okay.
How much belief do you have in Kobe Altman as he and his top lieutenants received contract extension? The Guardians might have already changed the game for you. They might have given you what you want. This might be a little early in the game, but that's coming up in 5 minutes with Justin Latta, Locked On Guardians on 92.3 The Fan. To talk all things Gardos of the Locked On Guardians podcast, the great Justin Latta joins us. What's up, buddy?
Oh, I'm doing good. No sleep last night, but I'm ready to go and do this all over again today. I've been doing it already all day.
So we'll get to the draft stuff here because there's a right turn the Guardians have made here. But, you know, the first half of the season has come and gone. I believe they're still three games below 500. Compared to where you thought they were going to be this season, how did the first half of the season grade out versus where you expected them to be?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of thought they'd hover around 500 most of the year. I think coming into the year, for sure, the idea was they improved the starting pitching, which was going to combat any bullpen regression they had from a year ago. And then you were hoping to win a lot of, you know, 3-2 baseball games, which obviously didn't happen because they had a hard time hitting, and the starting pitching also didn't do all that great to start the season. They found their footing a little bit since then. 10-game losing streaks are going to take a lot out of you. If they go 5-5 there, you're looking kind of close to what that is. So yeah, the offense, like there are certain guys that just didn't develop. Like Kyle Manzara had a great April, didn't continue that all year. He got a little bit better lately. They had to send Brian Rocchio back down. He's back playing a little bit better. I really was a little bit higher on the reacquisition of Nolan Jones. That hasn't panned out. You know, he's been better lately. I also thought Lane Thomas was going to have a great contract year, to be honest, and it's been, you know, a lost season for him. So I think a lot of guys offensively, they were counting on to step up this year and boost the offense, didn't take that step forward, and that's kind of why you saw things fall on them offensively throughout the year, and that's why they are where they are.
How much of this team is going to be Sellers? Is it going to be more than just Klasse? Do you think Kwan gets thrown in the mix there as well?
I don't think either of them are going to be traded, to be honest with you. I don't see a reason for the Guardians to, like, they can listen on Klasse. They, you know, they don't hang up the phone on anybody except for Jose Ramirez. They're going to take offers, but I just don't see anybody making the kind of offer that they're going to bite on when it comes to Klasse. They got him for next year for six-something million. That's still relatively cheap. And if you trade Klasse, you're not going to get guys that are going to really help you next year. Like, remember, they got Manzaro for Aaron Civale, and he wasn't really enough at all last year, and he's still going through it this year. Klasse obviously is much better than Aaron Civale, but I just don't see anybody ponying up for that. And if you trade him, you know, you got to pay Cade Smith more money because he's going to be your closer, which means he goes into arbitration without a deal and saves jack up arbitration prices. So, and then they don't have the bullpen depth to survive that either. So I just don't see them getting an offer where they say, yeah, this makes sense for us. Like, I think they'd do it if they got an offer, but I just don't see that offer coming. And as for Kwan, you know, that's a conversation you can revisit in the offseason. I feel like both of them in the offseason. I just don't see that. I don't think their position changes. I think maybe they'll try to get something for Carlos Santana. If Paul Sewald has a good couple of games before the break, he's somebody. Like, I just don't see the offer being big enough for them to pull the trigger on those kind of deals.
Justin, what shot do you give them for a second-half run, make it into the wild card?
Well, I mean, you won 6-7, and that put them, what, like four and a half back, I want to say, of a wild card spot. The pitching staff's getting better. Like, Tanner Bibee's still working on consistency. Their schedule out of the break is really soft. You've got the Royals, the Rockies, the Orioles, who are struggling. Their schedule before the All-Star break, the Athletics are coming to town, who are pesky, but aren't having a great year. If they have a nice stretch there before the trade deadline, I could see them kind of having a shot at it. But they're also going to have to call guys up. Like, you're going to have DeLauder up. You're going to have Kapus. And you've got to break in those rookie guys. So it's still a coin flip, to be honest, because you're going to bring guys up from the minors at some point, and those guys have to get acclimated. They have to go through struggles, or maybe they'll be hot and they'll cool off. So it's going to be a 50-50 shot, and I don't see them being major buyers anyway. So it's really a coin flip in the second half. And that's only if they take advantage of the soft stretch coming out of the break.
Justin, I've said, given Lane's been injured this year and given the fact that he is having as bad of a season as you possibly could going into free agency year, I think they should pick up the phone and say, hey, well, what about a one-year bridge deal so you can focus on getting healthy? And when you play this year, we can kind of spring forward next year. What do you think about that?
That's a great idea. You're 100% right. I agree with that idea because they don't have a surefire option for next year. Like, if Lane Thomas goes into free agency and they don't want him to come back, then, you know, Nolan Jones is your center fielder who's been most of the year because DeLauder's not a center fielder. You can't do it there because he already can't stay healthy. You put him in center, you're going to put him even under more duress. Kwan can't play center, or you don't want him to because of arbitration and his hamstring issue. So, yeah, I think Lane Thomas coming back, unless you really want to believe you want to throw Angel Martinez in center full-time next year, which is an option. You know, you could put Angel Martinez in center field next year full-time. There's Daniel Sheeman who can handle second. Hopefully next year you have Travis Bazana, but I would 100% be open to the option of bringing Lane Thomas back, because at the worst, you bring Lane Thomas back next year, he goes back into the role where he really fits the best, and that's hitting left-handed pitching and maybe playing right field in some sort of like quasi-platoon between center and right.
All right, tell us about Lord Tubbington. Do you like the pick? So last year he was constantly talked about being like 1-1. He was raved about from everyone, and then this last season it just didn't go as well for him. But obviously he's still taken in the first round, and imagine a highly touted prospect.
He was, yeah. I mean, I think some of the 1-1 talk was a little overblown. Part of that is because this is just not a good draft class. Like, this is a year. I can't even count the number of guys. Like, there's a guy who next year, Rock Chalowski from UCLA, that if he was eligible this year, he would have been the first overall pick, I feel like. It was not a great draft year. So him being 1-1, whether it was overhype or the fact that it was just a bad class, I don't necessarily buy that. But, yeah, I mean, he's got a lot of power. There's a lot of exciting tools. You know, people really like his work ethic and drive and who he is as a character. I mean, well, you don't get the nickname Lord Tubbington by accident. It's a fun player. It's a totally different profile than the Guardians have gone for in the past. It comes with a ton of risk. There just aren't a lot of examples in the major leagues, if any, of guys that have had his strikeout issues in college that have succeeded in the pros. It's the third. I'm not a big believer in batting average at the pro level, but in terms of how successful that makes you. But in college, when you have a low batting average, it's kind of a red flag. And he had the third lowest batting average, I want to say, in like the last 40-something years of where he got drafted. So it's a big risk profile. There's a lot of tools there. They're pivoting on what they do, and we'll see if they can make those things work for them in a way that they couldn't make guys who don't hit for any power teaching them power.
Justin Latta on the fan hotline here with Nick and Jonathan breaking down the first half of the Guardian season, what to expect in the second half, and of course the draft, which began yesterday. So specific to LaViolette, is he somebody that can move quickly given that he's a college bat, or should we expect this one to take time?
I would expect it to take a little bit of time because, A, you know, he had another procedure to clean up the wrist issue he had late in the season during the SEC tournament. So, number one, I would lean on the side that he's not even going to play this year in pro ball because they didn't set any expectations of a timeline of when he's going to play because they want to go through and make sure, you know, it makes sense for him. I didn't get the indication yesterday that they were going to be pushing the button for him to play this year. So I would not be shocked if he doesn't play at all this year. And then you go into next year, he's got to start at the beginning. And you got to see, like, if he has a lot of the same issues in the minors next year where he has a lot of swing and miss in the zone, it might take time. He does draw walks, but yeah, I wouldn't necessarily sit there and say he's going to move really fast. I mean, Travis Bazzano's not, I know he got hurt, but he's not even up yet. So, like, if the player like that's not up that fast, I don't see Jace LaViolette. This is not a great draft class overall, so I just don't see LaViolette as a guy who you're like, okay, next year he's in the majors. Like, I think it's 2027, I think, would be a good timeline for him.
What do you make in their philosophy change where instead of just a lot of contact guys, now they're going for some more power?
I mean, it's good that they changed their approach. Clearly what they were doing was not working. It took a lot of up the middle guys who hit the had a lot of contact, and they thought, well, it's easier to teach guys that hit power who can already make contact, but that has not worked out for them at all. They don't have any impact, and they don't have any corner bats in the system. I mean, they have, you know, Kapus and DeLauder, and they've got some other guys. Everybody else is up the middle. It's a necessary change in philosophy that way. It's just they took such a hard, like you said, Nick, a hard right turn on what they were doing. And I don't think there was a real way for them to find balance in this draft because you weren't going to find the right fit in terms of guys who make enough contact but also hit for power and have some position. Like, there was just no perfect fit for them. So maybe this is taking advantage of value. I'll be curious to see. Like, they've leaned into it. I'll be curious to see if this is a trend now because this wasn't a great draft class. Did they pounce on value? Have they changed their philosophy? Did they go because it was a very weak draft class? I don't know. It's going to be interesting. Like, what they were doing didn't work. So I'm curious to see how it works out. I'm a little bit of a skeptic, to be honest with you.
Justin, what's the latest on last year's number one pick overall and his trajectory to hit the majors?
So Travis Bazzano had the oblique or the core issue a couple months ago in Akron. He is now playing rehab games in Arizona. I don't believe he's played a back-to-back game yet at second base. He's alternated between second base and DH. So I would imagine they're going to also, you know, wait on something like that. They also don't play whole nine-inning games in Arizona because it's 100 million degrees in Arizona this time of year. So it probably, I would guess, he's back in Akron by the end of July. And then, you know, maybe sometime in September he gets to Columbus. That'd be ideal. And then I think we're talking next year. I don't think the Guardians' position this year, given that Bazzana got hurt in this time and where they're at, and I don't think it makes sense to bring him to the majors this year. I mean, you could maybe try for a September call-up and maybe keep his rookie eligibility for 2026, and he can do one of those prospect promotion draft pick rookie of the year campaigns, but I would think it's more likely that we're going to see him next year.
We've had some injuries, obviously, but the Kafis, DeWater, Brito trio, is there anything? Didn't mean to make that rhyme, but it just did.
I kind of want them to all come up together now so we can
do that. Call them the Brito trio? Yeah, I like that. Is there anything there? Do you see any one of them coming up in the next, I don't know, let's say 3 weeks?
I hope so. I mean, Brito, I don't know, because Brito's back on the injured list with a hamstring strain, so he's currently out again. He came back for 8 games, and then he hurt his hamstring, so Brito... Yeah. Totally up in the air, which stinks, because I think Brito for sure would have been up a while ago if he was healthy. And then DeWater might have been too if he didn't break camp injured, so maybe he would have been too. So I would think that DeWater, as long as this wrist issue that he sat out with the last couple of games is not anything major, he should be up sometime in July or August. I can't imagine any reasons not to call him up at this point, at that point of the time, if the wrist injury isn't serious. And then if you do trade Carlos Santana, you do open up at bats for Kafis. So I would think by the end of the year, both those guys should be in the majors. And I hope that Brito's healthy enough to be up, because like I said, he would have been, to me, the first one that would have been up, because he was battling at second base with Arias in spring training.
Justin, before we go, what do you kind of think are Shane Bieber and I almost said Justin Lotta, John Means' roles in the second half of the season here?
I'm really interested in the Bieber thing. There's so much debate about like whether or not he'll have trade value, right? Because I don't even know if he's – I don't think he's – I mean, he's going to pitch in Arizona here tomorrow or Wednesday. I don't think he's going to have time to pitch a major league rehab or a major league game. So, like, how much trade value is he going to have? So, I mean, I know the Guardians traded for Alex Cobb last year. So I just don't know for sure if someone's going to buy in on him as a trade candidate. We'll see. And I also think he might prefer to stay here just because he trusts them. That's why he re-signed with the injury. So Bieber, you know, he can come back and step in if he comes back healthy and the pitching rotation just gets that much better, hopefully, if he's looking good. And, you know, as far as John Means, I guess we'll see how the Luis Ortiz situation pans out. But if John Means comes back in August and looks interesting, like that's a guy you have for next year guaranteed. Hopefully he looks good. This is his second Tommy John, so there's a little bit more concern there. But given the uncertainty with the Luis Ortiz thing, those guys might actually play really important roles, especially Bieber, obviously.
Yeah, Steve Phillips was on last week and treated JP like an idiot for asking about trading Shane Bieber. Meanwhile, social media streets have been talking about this, and JP's been talking about it for a minute.
Don't worry, Justin. I treated Steve Phillips like he's an idiot, too.
That's okay. I mean, I Steve Phillips knows more than I do, so if he's an idiot, then I'm an idiot.
We can all be idiots together.
We've been saying that for a while. Justin, really good stuff, buddy. Appreciate you.
All right. Thanks, guys. I appreciate you.
Justin Latta there, Locked On Guardians on the Fan Hotline.
Steve was like offended was the problem there.
He was, yeah.
He was like, who are you even asking
like
about
Bieber? Insulted his intelligence by asking that.
The audacity of a Cleveland sports radio host to ask about a pitcher in the city.
When we've got multiple instances of guys being traded despite not pitching again. But never mind. It doesn't matter. Alex Cobb being one of them, which Justin was so kind to mention there. We'll react to what Justin had to say about the situation with the Gardos and the Peterlin pass in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. I think the Guardians did kind of tip their hand. They've done some uncharacteristic things this year in their struggles. First off, during the 10-game losing streak, Antonetti and everyone on the organization went on a full tilt counterstrike of, we believe in these guys, we're not making moves. And that was in the wake of not putting DeLauder or Kafis up. That was in the wake of the 10-game losing streak. I think this is just as significant. This is as reactionary of a first day of the draft we've had, where we know the Guardians are short King Express. They love them some diminutive hitters.
Yeah.
Every single guy they drafted is 6'3 and built like a linebacker and has massive power and huge questions on whether it's going to translate and allow them to get to the big leagues. I don't think that's an accident after the way where the offense has gone the last 2 years.
And I commend them for it. Like, that's good. They recognize that their plan when it comes to developing hitters and position players absolutely stinks. And so the only way to, you can't just keep doing the same things over and over. The only way to mix it up was to do something like this and then to go down that road. So I got to commend them for it, even with the idea that this has a chance of just not working out as well.
I was going to say, the only thing about this is you went so hard in one direction. I'm like, you could have drafted two guys with 60 power. You know what I mean? Like, you could still draft some of the guys you like. And they did. They got a kid today from Ole Miss that is kind of that player. But it's like, they just went with four of their first picks. They went so hard in one direction. It's like, okay, we didn't ask you to draft only power bats. You can draft a wide range of this instead of just, no, we have a profile and this is what we're chasing on this year's draft.
I mean, I'm fascinated by Lord Tubington in so many different ways. Like, and not just the nickname, but that's how I'm going to keep calling him because I've not learned his last name well enough to be able to say it yet.
I just want to know why I wasn't given that at any point in the last 3 years.
Lord Tubington?
Yes.
It sounds very insulting, and he doesn't seem like he's not even that big of a guy.
He is a unit. He is 6'6" and 230 pounds.
No, but like the 230 part, I'm 230. Like, that's not good for me if a guy that's 230 also has the name Ward Tubington and he's got 4 inches on me.
Well, maybe.
In height.
Allegedly.
Easy
maybe.
Now. That was very well done, but
maybe
easy now.
Maybe he used to be 6'6", 270.
There's got to be something there. There's more to Ward Tubington. Like, maybe he's like Big Al. I hit dingers. Looks like that kid growing up, and they just called him Ward Tubington. And now you fast forward, and he's like, he looks like he's in good shape.
I just like Lord Tubington. That's all. And he is a total dude.
So why I'm fascinated by him is in college baseball, you shouldn't hit 258.
Yeah.
That's not really a thing. Like proper perspective, Bazzana hit 407.
Yep.
You're not supposed to hit 258. And his whiff rate is extremely high. And so there's a lot that you got to worry about. You also worry about the idea that, like, he legitimately 2 years ago was expected to go 1-1. He was supposed to be the best player in his class. And then you fast forward and it's like, yeah, you're not that. It'd be like if Klubnik, who's right now projected to be the top quarterback off the board, just kind of stunk up the joint for a season and then got taken in the late first round. Like, there's optimism that's still there. He had the projections at one point for a reason, but it just doesn't exist the same way.
They call that the Hackenberg-Tebow line of play. Or, ooh, Paxton Lynch.
Quinn Ewers, too.
Yeah. Well, no, he went the seventh.
Well, Quinn went the seventh. But either way, it didn't work out for any of those guys that you're mentioning.
Not great.
Oh, there's only one man with the knowledge to criticize and the power to let it slide. It's time for this week's Peterlin Pass.
All right, we're going to give the Peterlin Pass to Major League Baseball, or whoever ended up giving the spot to Jacob Mizorowski and adding him to the All-Star game. He began his MLB career last month. It happened on June 11th. He had a streak of 11 no-hit innings, more than any other starters managed at the start of their career since baseball's modern era began back in 1900. In his five starts for Milwaukee, he's 4-1, sub-3 ERA. But it's not even about that for me, Nick. It's more about the idea that you have a phenom on your hands in Major League Baseball with a guy that throws 103 miles per hour, has a 97-mile-per-hour slider. The same thing they did for Paul Skenes last year, getting him in after 11 starts. They're doing, once again, for the new Miz.
I mean, this is on speed, though. Five starts. 11 starts, I got it. He had been up for, 11 starts is what, 2 months?
Listen, they have a spot on the All-Star game for basically people that have just been awesome for their entire career that don't even do anything. Clayton Kershaw's at the All-Star game with that spot this year. Like, we have open opportunity to sell the game. Them giving it to Jacob Mizorowski instead of giving it to someone like Christopher Sanchez, the Phillies pitcher, I'm all for it. More people care about seeing Mizorowski. When you watch him pitch, you just think to yourself, oh,
more people in Milwaukee. How many people outside?
No. He's transcending baseball right now.
Skenes was one of one.
Mizorowski,
you can't transcend baseball in five starts.
He's transcending baseball right now.
You can't transcend it in five starts.
Up the 97-mile-an-hour slider, the hitting 103 on the radar gun.
Very few people are throwing 103 in today's game.
He has stuff you can't possibly replicate, and that's why he's going to be a star for a long time. He's a phenom, no question about it, and I like that baseball is giving him the biggest stage.
So, on one hand, I can look at this and go, well, it's fun, and baseball,
it's an
the
exhibition.
All-star. The problem is you didn't put him in there for some schlep with like a 4.25 ERA who had like a good first half of the season and that carried. I mean, it was Suarez, it was Sanchez, there's a couple other names that absolutely deserve it. So you got to walk a line. Like, I didn't have a problem with Skenes because 11 starts is a lot in the first half of the season if you didn't start the season in the big leagues. But like, this also wasn't Skenes. Like, Like Miz is a very, very highly touted prospect. He wasn't the number one pick the year before. So it's like,
he's not on the level of Skeens. I'll grant you that.
And I think the only reason this happened is because of Skeens of the All-Star game last year.
For sure. And he's got extreme star potential in the making. And so I got no problem with baseball swerving into their stars, making the game all about showcasing the best and the brightest talent, even if it is only after five stars.
But the problem is you still won't do the other things to develop the stars. So it's like, well, we got to make him part of it. So everybody's so excited about this. In your words, he's transcended baseball. And it's like, all right, can we get one of these guys like a shoe deal? I can't do that.
Well, that's not on the commissioner.
Can we get one of these? No, I mean, the overall ecosystem of baseball is on the commissioner. The closed-mindedness, and we got to close the locker room at every cost, is absolutely a huge part of not building superstars.
No, but not the shoe part specifically, because it's not like you can't hold Nike's hand.
It was a bad comp.
Okay,
right?
That's fine.
He didn't get a pizza deal. He didn't get a Lord Tubington now, needs a pizza deal.
Would I like Miz to be showcased a bunch more? Yes, I would, but this is a good first start in that. It's a good first start for him having an opportunity to go up there against the game's best on the other side. And imagine if he goes through secession and strikes out three of the American League's best and just only generate more interest.
I hope they just annihilate him.
Well, that would not be good.
I hope his career never recovers. No, that's not nice. That would be mean.
Very mean.
I retract that statement immediately.
Kershaw, after watching him pitch because the Dodgers played the Brewers, he basically put him in Cooperstown after that start. He's like, I've never seen him firsthand. This is the type of guy that you basically pet the house on him being a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Are you seconding the Peterlin pass when it comes to Jacob Mizorowski being involved in the All-Star game despite only having five career starts? More on baseball and Lord Tubington later in the show, but Sam Bruckhouse, Assumer Sports, in 5 minutes, talking Browns preview, Browns getting ready for camp, and we did not see this top 10 quarterback coming. We'll see if Sam agrees with that in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
The Peterlin Pass.